Sometimes the most difficult challenges faced by parents are their children's meltdowns. And depending on the age of the child, that child may not be able to tell us what's wrong. Well, in episode 4 of our Parenting Foundation season, Lori and Mackenzie, our co-hosts, they do a really nice job discussing the reality of what those meltdowns really look like. And they give us some really helpful strategies that we can use when the child is in the throes of a meltdown.
Barb, you are so right. Anytime those emotions rise to the surface, we have to look beyond like the crying and the yelling, which might be frustrating, but we have to really understand what's going on. You know, definitely a time when that stop, breathe, talk might come into play. But I know that Lori and Mackenzie have some other ideas for us too. So let's roll and listen in. Welcome.
Hello.
Welcome to the Science of Parenting podcast, where we connect you with research-based information that fits your family. We'll talk about the realities of being a parent and how research can help guide our parenting decisions. I'm Lori Hayangs, parent of 3 in 3 life stages, launched in college and in high school, and I'm a parenting educator.
And I'm Mackenzie Johnson, parent of 2 little ones with their own quirks, and I'm a parenting educator.
So today we're talking about understanding and anticipating meltdowns or tantrums or falling apart or whatever else you might call it.
Oh gosh, yeah. I probably say falling apart like, oh, and I include me. We're falling apart.
Yeah.
All of us collectively.
All the alls.
All the alls. Big feelings. There's so many big feelings in parents and kids.
I yeah, definitely. So, you know, when you think about it, gosh, there are so many times that meltdowns can happen.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Like, round the clock. Everything's at risk.
Oh, yeah. 24/7, right? Yeah. So, like, when I think about meltdowns, do you ever think about, like you know that a meltdown is always going to happen at a certain place or time? Do you have any of those thoughts?
Bedtime. In our house right now, like it's coming, bedtime's coming. It's gonna be hard. It's a surprise every time that we have to go to bed. Like bedtime in our house. What about you? When can you anticipate that?
I remember anticipating that when we would go out for dinner, or mostly that kind of thing where we were gonna go out and then sit down, or go out and then have to sit and be quiet. A meeting or an event or that kind of thing, that's kind of where the meltdown would occur.
Oh yeah, the times when we're just like, it's coming. We know.
Weren't those the times before you had kids where you were thinking, oh, I know what I would do in that situation,
right? Like, oh yeah, if only.
Yeah. So our research tidbits today are about understanding meltdowns and tantrums and how we as parents can survive them.
Yes. Yes. Getting through life, they will be a reality, but how can we like understand them and know when they're coming?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So the first tidbit we have is from McCurdy, and they tell us that temper tantrums are defined kind of as these overt displays of, get this, unpleasant behaviors.
Unpleasant.
Unpleasant that are extreme and severe in nature and disproportionate to the situation. That made me chuckle when I read that.
I was like, and I love the disproportionate to the situation. You've maybe seen like those posts on like social media of like, the reason my toddler like is crying today or is angry today, or like, you know, you see those posts and it's like, yeah, this was disproportionate. That's a great word for it.
The red bowl and not the blue bowl, right?
Yes.
So then here is some examples from Daniels, Mandeleko, and Luthi. They give us some examples of behavior that are associated with meltdowns. So pay attention, because I want to know if you've seen or heard or maybe experienced any of these. So, and these are across different ages. So here's some toddler behaviors, or maybe preschool too. Toddlers and preschoolers. Let's look at these. Shouting, screaming, crying, falling to the floor,
flailing arms and legs, hitting, kicking, throwing, engaging in breath holding.
Yeah.
Just the ones your children have had, not the ones that you've had, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
Then we also have adolescent, you know, behaviors as well. We might have becoming withdrawn, becoming violent, verbal outbursts, just becoming irrational, loud, hyperventilating. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep. That's a list. That is a list.
There's the list.
Any of those feel closest to home for you?
Yeah, definitely. I didn't really have any shouters. Like I don't have it. And I'm not really a shouter. So
yeah, I can see
more
that.
Of the crying, and just that complete loss of any rational thoughts or behaviors, you know, just, in some of that dropping, you know, dropping to the floor, just that pure meltdown mode. And I chuckle sometimes, and, you know, you might hear me as the adult say, well, I think I just need to go rock in the corner of my closet. Like, I just need to go over there, 'cause I'm having completely irrational meltdown as well.
Yeah. See, and I can't really say that my kids like necessarily shout all the time, but there's moments like that's usually how I know, like, ooh, this is big. This is hard. Like if they're shouting, that is like, oof.
Yeah.
This is hard for you. Yeah. So that one's a big one. Otherwise I'd say common, like tears are what's most common.
Yeah.
Tears are the common. And because it is like they're the big feelings. Like it's this display of these really strong emotions. Like, and it's so like, I love the word raw for like little kids. Like it's so raw. Like, oh, I am devastated. Or like, oh, I'm mad. Like I'm furious. Like it is raw.
I have these huge feelings. When I taught preschool, I had a couple of hitters. You know, hitters and the pinchers. Oh, the pinchers.
Pinchy. Like, ouch.
You know, and still you could just, I specifically remember a time where one of the little ones in my preschool class just had such big feelings, and literally the eyes, they were looking at me like in a panic, and they knew they were about
wide-eyed
to lash out and pinch and hit. He was actually kind of a spitter as well.
Oh,
like his eyes were already telling me, I am so sorry for what I'm about to do, but I cannot control this, you know, spit.
Yes.
Lots of behaviors.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it is like even, pinching, it doesn't necessarily naturally seem like it comes to this specific feeling, but it is. It's like, I don't know what to do. Pinching you. Right?
I didn't mean any to. Which brings us right into the research tidbit number two that talks about the reasons that kids have meltdowns. And, you know, how cool that there are actually research about why kids have meltdowns.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I feel like that's, you know, I think that that's what we always want to do for you as you're listening and watching us, is help you know that, you know, our goal is to sift through the research.
Yes.
And, you know, we want you to look at the research that we've sifted through and pick out the ones that really work for your children and your family. So, all right, let me read this. Kyle tells us that children may have tantrums or meltdowns to get what they want. Mm-hmm. Avoid or escape doing something they don't want to do.
Okay. Those are like vice versa. Yep.
Seeking parental attention. Yeah. So I'm going to stop there because I love watching infants, and I love watching infants out in public. And I think, I even remember as my children were growing up and I would point out a baby and I would say, look at that baby trying to get its parents' attention. And I'd say, look at the eyebrows, look at her little fingers moving. You know, she really wants her mom's attention. And, you know, look at the toes. Oh my gosh, toes and eyebrows and fingers have so much communication in them. And so, so in this research article, it's telling us that, hey, they're trying to get parental attention. And so right before the meltdown came the wiggling of the toes and the eyebrows. And so anyway, I digress. McCurdy tells us that also meltdowns can occur when children are tired, hungry, ill, or frustrated. And then we have another one. Brayton tells us meltdowns can be from sensory overload.
Okay, hello, like guilty me, and I'm an adult. I talked about that, was that last episode? That like I get so overstimulated, like it's loud, and I totally can relate to that. At like little kids, big kids, grown-ups. That when there's a lot going on, it can be hard to, you know, hear yourself think or try to process, you know, this big feeling I have, like totally get the sensory overload.
Right. And I think that's the piece where when you ask me which, you know, what's the most typical place that we would have meltdowns, it was going out in public because of that sensory overload.
Oh yeah.
For that child, there was so much going on. And that's when I could always occur. I always knew that a meltdown would occur when we were, I had that sensory overload had to do. So one more, Schoenbeck, she might summarize it best in saying that meltdowns typically happen when kids are lacking the coping skills to deal with their emotions.
Yeah, that sums it up.
Can't cope.
Yep. Like the hungry, angry, lonely, tired, frustrated, ill. Like, yeah. It's hard to do, like, hanger, right? We get hangry. Like,
yeah.
And part of that is because I'm having a hard time using my coping skills with my hunger.
Right? I'm so hungry. Like, you just asked me to put my shoes on right now, but I'm so hungry.
Nobody.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm hungry, and I can't think about the fact that I could just put them on. Like, no, not shoes.
Right?
That is putting me over the edge because I'm already struggling this much over the top of my head with hunger.
Yeah. You know I can't get my heel in there easily. Right?
This is too hard.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. So, you know, meltdowns are common. We're going to talk about temperament later on, but meltdowns are common, and it's common across different ages. And I think that that's really important for us to remember as, oh gosh, not yet, Lori, not yet. But when we look at brain development, we can really talk about why they keep happening throughout the ages. And it's not just isolated to toddlers and preschool.
No, we know that it's like developmentally appropriate, right? For like a 2 to 4 year old, they're figuring out like, whoa, I have some choices here. There are things that I can control. And so that like striving for independence makes it kind of like prime time to see these tantrums, right? Like, you know, we can kind of expect it in that age range. That's why they warn us about terrible 2s and 3-nager and those kinds of things. So we know it's developmentally appropriate there, but not isolated there. Like that's not the only spot we're going to see it.
Exactly. And I think that sometimes when I talk to parents of preteens and those early teen years, that you said it right there, the 3-nager, right? Yeah. Because guess what? It's going to happen again in those preteen years. And and there's great scientific evidence behind why that happens. And, you know, the brain is going through so much. Still, last time we talked about the brain not being completely developed till the age of 25. And so there's this huge growth spurt, obviously, in the brain, you know, early on, those 0 to 3 years. But then again, as you hit that pre-adolescence, the hormones and the, you know, all the other things that are happening in the body are impacting the brain. And so that kid that you just thought you had figured out wakes up one day as, you know, a 12 and a half year old. And all of a sudden you're like, whoa,
where did that come from?
Their kid in my house and they took mine and where did they go? And because they just those hormones in the brain take over. And sometimes I describe it as, sometimes in the Midwest, we get this crazy wild ice, this black ice, and you can't even see it. And so the black ice covers the roads. And so nothing can drive correctly on those roads, right? Nothing can drive correctly on black ice.
Totally.
The information, the cars just fly off, right? And so in the brain, that's kind of what the hormones do at about that preteen years. You know, those hormones cover those roads. That information had been going down so smoothly. And now, man, it's sliding off to the left and the right. And we have no control because of that those hormones that are covering the connections in the brain, those thinking processes are gone.
They've built those roads over time, right? They're getting good. Like, okay, maybe getting their shoes on is not a meltdown every day at 14, or, you know, fingers crossed.
Right.
But so they've built some of those coping skills, but now they need new ones.
Right.
They need to be able to do new things and navigate these new hormonal changes in their brain.
Yeah.
Oh, like I need new skills. I was just getting, like you said, just getting out the old, They were good at the old ones. Did they need new ones?
And reminding them of those old skills that they used to use. You know, like they had to pull them out of the box for a while. Wait, we got to pull those dust skills back out. Yeah, dust off those skills, right?
Totally. But there's a lot happening. But kind of part of the beauty of, you know, this research and reality thing is that there is, you talk about that scientific evidence tells us there are times when we can anticipate, right? So like I talk about bedtime, you were talking about when you go out to eat, but when we recognize some of those things over time, we can start to anticipate it.
Right? Yes. And remembering there's always a reason. Like there actually really always is a reason. There is not much in life that we actually do without reason, right? Why did we turn left? Why did we turn right? Why did we pick up that glass? Why did we choose the spoon over the fork? Mm-hmm. And yet when a child is having a meltdown, we go, well, it was for no reason.
Yeah. Right? So true.
Wait. So actually, it was. We just missed it.
Yeah. Right?
And so those are some of my favorite things to talk about with parents is, I know it seems like there was a reason or there was no reason, but we just actually – we just missed it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, how can we anticipate it? There is some really neat research that we looked up on how to prevent and anticipate meltdowns. So, you know, let's dive into those ideas. How about it?
Totally. Let's do it.
All right. So the first one. Okay. So wait. Let's do that. Let's play a game. So first, I want you to think of the time most often that a meltdown is going to occur. Like you think about, okay, I pretty much know that this meltdown is always going to occur. You said bedtime. I said for one of my daughters, it was going out in public, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm thinking about that in my head. And according to this list from Daniels, Mandeleko, and Luthi, the first bullet point that we look at is to identify the triggers of meltdowns.
Bedtime. But I'll say for me, and the one, you know, if I like walk through with that is I can anticipate, I can feel it coming, you know, that in itself is a trigger. Like, right, she's tired at the end of the day, we've had a full day, whatever I get to do once I'm finally home, you know, my daughter like goes to childcare, so I'm home for the day, I'm settled in, I got to eat, and now I have to go to bed and be done with this day.
Right?
Like, so it is the combination of like the tired and I wish I had more time here. That's the trigger at bedtime.
Yeah.
What about you?
And for me, that trigger, that going out of the place that was the most secure. So we would go out in public, whether it was to shop, to go to an event, like I said, to go to daycare, you know, just that idea that, okay, we're going out of our safe, secure place. We go out of that safe, secure place every day.
Yeah.
Right? But
but it's new.
Right. And even now as a young adult, going out of that safe, secure place, she has to adjust. And she doesn't melt down anymore. But I definitely can see, you know, different behaviors and trigger points in her. So
yeah, still using those skills.
Totally. Absolutely.
Use those skills.
All right. The next thing then, so we've identified the trigger, having a plan for those common meltdown times, having a plan, maybe like snacks or a place to rest or a place for quiet time.
All right. I can say in our house, actually, I got this tidbit from you. So I told you I was struggling one day. We were on a call and my daughter was home with us, home with me. And, she was having a like nap time. Like I said, we were all falling apart.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You're like, Mackenzie, you know this, like visual schedule. So a visual schedule is basically, for everybody who maybe hasn't heard of it or hasn't used one, a visual schedule is a concept for, you know, a child and honestly, in an adult, where you kind of lay out the expectations of the routine. So a visual schedule is kind of, they can anticipate, but instead of just using words, you're using like pictures. And so we had to, that was a tool we started using. I knew I needed to have a plan for bedtime. And so I started using kind of this little visual schedule of like a picture of putting our pajamas on and, you know, those kinds of things. So I had to have a plan. And then for us, it was using that visual schedule tool.
Oh, that's awesome. And so then the next bullet point that he talks about is maintaining a usual routine.
Oh, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, there it is. Yeah. And then providing warning for changes. That was huge for us. Like, we needed to let her know that there was going to be a change. Now, granted, obviously, sometimes things come up spontaneously and you can't. And then that's where we jump back into what we talked about last week, was that idea of respect. Like, I understand that you're upset. We didn't have a chance to warn you. But, you know, we've anticipated, we've planned, we've tried to maintain a usual routine. And a usual routine for leaving the house might be, like, literally, I needed to tell her, here's where we're going. Here's what we're going to do. Here's who you might see there. Here's what we might do there. Okay. Yeah. And so, yes, that wasn't the same words I used every time, but it was that same process.
Yes.
Here's where we're going to see. Here's who we're going to see. Here's what we're going to do. And here's, you know, when we're coming back. Granted, she didn't always have a concept of time, but, it, you know, even just talking through in that calm, cool, collected voice assured her that, okay, mom's got a plan. I'm going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And we're coming back.
Yes, we're coming back to my safe space.
Yeah.
Our routine, that little visual schedule that we did help kind of set us in a routine. We had kind of a loose structure of what that usually looked like at like bedtime and nap time, but it kind of solidified like, okay, we're going to brush our teeth. We're going to get on jammies. We're going to read books. We're going to have some snuggle time. Right. But like it secured that routine. And then it was actually kind of a part of that routine became, okay, we have about 10 minutes till bedtime. Okay. We have about 5 minutes. It's really not a time. This isn't a time we want to get out a new toy. You know? And so those warnings became a part of that routine too.
Right. Exactly. What you did right there is ties right into the next one, which is teaching feeling words and teaching words about the vocabulary, sharing words like what you did with the pictures and the 10 minutes and the 5 minutes. And, you know, now is not the appropriate time to get out a new toy, et cetera.
Yeah. And I think even helping my child recognize like, oh, I can tell you're mad. Like, you're so mad that we don't have more time for, or, and sometimes I get it wrong, right? Like the other day I asked my daughter, she was, you know, upset about something. I'm like, oh, you're disappointed. She goes, no, mom, I'm frustrated. but I was like, okay, I missed it there. But like, I'm excited that you know, you've picked up that, like, I can tell you, like, I'm mad at you for that. Or, you know, when bedtime inevitably does come and it's a meltdown, oh, you are. I'm mad that you made me put that away. Like, oh, yes. But those feeling words, that emotion, helping our kids. I mean, sometimes it feels a little corny, but how do kids learn that? Like, right? They have to be taught. It doesn't come totally and to learn distressed.
Exactly. And then that idea, the next one that they offer up is encouraging appropriate alternatives to tantrums. So I know that you're nervous about going into this building. So here's how you can show me that you're nervous instead. So instead of right now you're crying and whining and hanging onto my waist, let's do this instead. So what can we do instead? So instead we can get our books that we have in our bag. So instead for her, I even offered her the opportunity to just close her eyes. You know what? What I want you to do is instead of, you know, hanging onto my waist and screaming, I want you to just close your eyes and hold my hand. Close your eyes and hold my hand. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, offering her an appropriate alternative. And for older kids, you can kind of talk through these things ahead of time and say, you know, I know that last time we went here, you were frustrated. So what could you do instead in case you get frustrated again? You know, absolutely. Talk to your elementary school age child about, you know, you didn't enjoy it because it seemed like it took a long time, didn't it? You know, that meeting or that program that we were at, it seemed like it took a long time. And so instead of kicking the chair in front of you and bothering the other participants that were there, what could you do instead?
Yes.
Right.
That instead, I think that word is like the key there is like, okay, instead of.
Right.
You know, falling to the ground, screaming, or for older kids, instead of not speaking to anybody or, you know, instead of those things, like, what can our plan be? Because they can have a plan. Like, come up with your own plan when you're an older kid.
Exactly. And that offers them this next thing that says offering them choices and finding a way to say yes. So offering them choices. Okay, so which way I get a choice in how I can behave? I have two alternative plans, my mom and dad, or my mom and my aunt and whom my grandma, my uncle, whoever the adult I'm with is okay with me doing option A or B, right?
Yep.
And sometimes as the adult, we forget that just two choices is easy enough. I'm totally okay with you closing your eyes and holding my hand, or I'm totally okay with you, you know, sitting down and digging into your backpack. Which one do you want to do? Because what you're doing is not appropriate. So you choose which one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Our big one right now is, do you want to walk up the steps? Well, two-story house. Do you want to walk up the steps to bed, or do you want us to carry you?
Sure.
Like, do you want to walk? Or sometimes it's like, if the walking we know is not happening, do you want us to carry you silly, which is my husband like throwing her over his shoulder a little bit. Do you want us to carry you silly or carry you regular? Like, because we have to go to bed, right?
Right.
We're not budging on that it's bed, but we can budge on how we get there. Like, there's a choice. And you can say yes. I can say yes to either of those things.
I totally can say yes to either of those things. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then modeling appropriately how to deal with the feelings, those big feelings, right? Those disproportionate feelings. Yeah.
Unpleasant behavior.
Yes. And so, and really modeling, you said it the other week, we're the adults. So we actually are in charge of modeling what we want to see in our children. And that's hard when we have big feelings too.
It is.
You know, when we have big feelings too, that's hard.
Yeah. I said before in another episode that I'm a breather, like that I'm like a, it's something I kind of started doing in order to show my kid, like to my daughter and my son, that like, you know, sometimes I need a breath. Like, this is hard for me too. I'm frustrated when you yell at me about bedtime. Like, I'm frustrated when you're having this tantrum at bedtime, even though I gave you the warnings. Like, you know what? I need to take a breath, or I need a break. And saying that, like, it's okay to not get it, like, to not have it perfectly. Like, I need a breath.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really mad right now.
And even taking it a step further to say, wow, I should have really taken a breath there, right?
Yeah.
How about you and I take a breath together? Mm-hmm. You know, so I think always acknowledging that, you know, sometimes we don't do the right thing. Sometimes we don't make the right choices as adults, and acknowledging like, wow, I just realized I yelled and screamed. And
we have an episode coming up this season about that.
Yeah.
Right? About what do we do when we lose it?
When we lose it. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so then there's the last thing that they talked about in the research was providing positive attention and lots of positive attention when children are doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's that idea of in the heat of the moment, they are not going to be able to hear us and hear any logic or, you know, any thinking correctly thoughts that we have. And so when there's a quiet time, or when there's a time where, you know, man, things are really going great, she walked up the stairs to bedtime, you know,
yay!
Woo-hoo, that is a celebrate. And we need to celebrate, celebrate, celebrate. We don't do enough celebrating.
In
these times of, I know that especially with my daughter, as she's gotten older, I remember vividly just a couple of weeks ago where we were sitting and what we were doing. And I said to her, you know, I really appreciate that when we met that person, you said thank you and you looked her in the eyes. And because that's something that we really work on with her is, you know, verbally speaking in a way that someone can hear you. And acknowledging that someone, you know, said hi, thank you. So I said, you know, thank you for saying hi and looking her in the eyes. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, acknowledging and celebrating those moments.
Yeah. Celebrating when we get it right. That, like, can reinforce that hopefully in the future we'll have less tantrums or less meltdowns. You know, we're celebrating like, you did, like, I'm so proud of you, or I'm so excited. You got your jammies on right away.
Right.
You know, celebrating things can reinforce it for the future. So, all right. So if that's the end of our list, I have a little bit of, you know, kind of your reality.
Okay.
Usually kind of wrap up before we see Mackenzie DeYoung. So for our listeners this week, so you've heard the research on tantrums and what defines a tantrum and kind of, you know, the examples of what you might see in a tantrum. We have some plans so that you can anticipate ideas to anticipate them. So I just encourage you to do that this week, like reflect. So yeah, bedtime. And I still need to keep working on that one. but reflecting on when the meltdowns are happening in your home with your kids, kind of working on identifying that trigger and then coming up with your own plan. Like, so what's your plan going to be? Maybe it's one of these from our list that we've gone through here from the research. And so figuring out what your plan is going to be to anticipate meltdowns. And inevitably, when we can't anticipate everything, right? You can't prevent everything.
Yeah.
With meltdowns. Come back next week.
Yeah. Right?
Next week, we're going to talk about how to survive in the heat of a meltdown. Like,
hopping into the heat and coming out alive.
We can do it. But yeah, so for this week, think about when those meltdowns might be happening, work on what might be triggering them and what your plan might be to anticipate it. So that's the reality for this week. So
excellent reality.
Excellent.
All right. I'm bracing myself.
Yeah, I think I'm ready. I think I'm ready.
Here she comes.
I feel pretty ready.
I think you're going to be ready for this one. So okay. As we were preparing for this episode, I know that there were a lot of things that you wanted to include. And there were some things that were left out that as we were going along, I kind of was thinking, oh, man. So I'm actually going to use this opportunity to hand it back over to you. Mackenzie, I know you have a list of so if a parent is thinking, okay, so you're talking about meltdowns. Does that mean all meltdowns are normal? You know, my child is 10 years old and continually having a meltdown. Does that just mean I have to deal with it and it's normal? So will you share some of that information on how to tell if it's a normal meltdown or if it may be an abnormal meltdown?
Yes, please. We did. We had such a tough time. Yeah, we had a tough time when like putting together the episode content of like there was so much good stuff to include. And so this was one of the things was how do we know when, right? We talked about it's kind of developmentally appropriate or typical for like a 2 to 4 year old to have be having meltdowns and things. But how do we know when maybe it's over the top and it might be time to like scope out some help? And so I have that stuff. Keep on my research here. So there were 5 things that I thought this was such a good list. So this was from an article, a 2012 article. I think we cited the authors above of, it was like 3 names, Daniels, Mendeleko, and Luthi.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it was a really great article. So ways to identify, so kind of some red flags for a tantrum. I have my list here. If tantrums are regularly occurring after age 4. So if it's a regular occurrence in your house and you have a child over the age of 4 that they're melting down frequently, right? I mean, it's going to happen from time to time, but frequently, that could be a sign. When children are injuring themselves or others during a tantrum, right? Yeah. Like we're getting into like a health and safety concern there. Right. That would be one. When tantrums are regularly lasting longer than 15 minutes. Now, I will admit, I remember one specifically that happened in my kitchen. That like went on forever, right? So that can happen occasionally, but in general, if they're regularly lasting over those 15 minutes. When there's more than 5 tantrums a day, I thought that was such, I was so grateful to see somewhere that like, here's a number, you know, like when I'm wondering, is this as often as I think it is? This feels like it's constant if it's more than 5 times a day. And then the last one was when a child's negative mood continues between tantrums. So, you know, we thought like things might be going well and then all of a sudden we're melting down. But if it's pretty frequent that your child is experiencing kind of that negative mood around the clock instead of just occasionally during a meltdown. So yeah, those are 5 things that could kind of indicate that, you know what, these meltdowns maybe aren't just a part of kind of normal life with a typical child, that maybe it's time to ask for some help.
Sure.
Oh, right. Exactly. And right there, you landed on it. It's good to ask for help. It's okay to ask for help. That's, you know, we don't have to do this alone. That's why there are people out there. You have special education services. You have your family doctors. You have school districts. You have local home visiting services, you know, nurses, home visiting nurses, et cetera. And so always tell parents, I always tell them, you know what, listen to your gut. Like you're a good parent and you want what's best for your child. And if you're asking these questions and you're asking me these questions, keep asking. And it's okay to be asking. It's scary. I mean, I absolutely 100% remember asking those questions about, is this how my child isn't doing this? Why isn't she doing this? And, I was the early childhood educator. And so when you're looking at behavior and meltdowns, I get it. It's scary to say, I don't know what's going on. And this is my kid. And why don't I know what's going on?
Oh, absolutely.
So ask.
And they're, sometimes people are afraid of like, oh, well, if my child's behind or if my child, but ultimately getting help shows how much you care and are invested in your child. Like that is a great thing to do for your child and for you, for yourself too. But it's a sign that you are active in your child's life and that you're involved with them and that you care about how things move forward. So no shame in asking for help. That's a great thing. And that's why we believe, at Science of Parenting, that there's more than one way to raise great kids. Every kid's unique.
Right.
And so we give you the information, you decide how to use it and how it makes sense for you and your kids for sure.
Yeah,
that was a great question, Kenz. I'm so glad you asked that because I was like, I want to tell everyone this really good information.
I know, and sometimes as we're planning these, we want to keep it, within a certain amount of time or within a certain amount of points. But sometimes you just have to add that extra tidbit. So I wanted to give you the space to do that.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of like, when we think, this is our stop, breathe, talk section, that's kind of what we did, right? And as a parent, sometimes the stopping, like, whoa, I'm soaking in, figuring out what's going on with my child. Mm-hmm. And that breath might be over a period of several days before we talk. And that talk might be ask for help.
Right.
The breathing might be going to find more information and the talk might be asking for help.
Yeah.
So, absolutely.
All right. Thanks.
Super. All right. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you. So yeah, this week we talked about understanding why our kiddos are having meltdown and understanding and then anticipating those children's meltdowns, right?
Yeah.
So that really diving back into there's a reason. There is a reason. And I have to play detective and come up with it. And maybe I need others to help me play detective and come up with a reason.
Yeah.
So thanks for joining us today on the Science of Parenting podcast. Remember to subscribe to our weekly audio podcast on Apple or Spotify or your favorite podcast app. And then watch our recorded videos each week and especially once a month.
Once a month.
Once a month. Join us live as we take your comments and questions.
Yeah. So as always, come along with us as we tackle the ins and outs and the ups and downs and the research and reality around the science of parenting. Thanks.
Thank you.
The Science of Parenting is a research-based education program hosted by Lori Hayens and Mackenzie Johnson, produced by Mackenzie DeYoung with research and writing by Barbara Dunn Swanson. Send in questions and comments to parenting@iastate.edu and connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. This program is brought to you by Iowa State University Extension and Outreach. This institution is an equal opportunity provider. For the full non-discrimination statement or accommodation inquiries, go to www.extension.iastate.edu/diversity/ext.